Hey, this is John Chris from Saturday Down South. Welcome to the SDS Podcast. Our guest for this episode is Gary Danielson, the color analyst for CBS Sports, who calls all the high-profile games in this league. We talked to him about making the switch from Vern Lundquist to Brad Nessler as his play-by-play man, which of last year's true freshman quarterbacks he likes most for the future, and whether or not offenses can continue to run 90 plays per game. Is that even sustainable? Listen and find out. All right, Gary, we're coming off the last year of you partnering with Vern Lundquist. This is going to be your first season without him with CBS. How much thought have you given to it about just moving forward in your career and not having him alongside?
Well, some. You know, it was a, it became, this was the kickoff of the farewell for Vern last year, SEC Media Days.
Right.
We had an anticipation of what it could be. It turned out way better, you know. It was very emotional at the end. You know, can't work with a guy for 11 years and not miss it. And I think the league will miss Vern a lot. But, you know, we couldn't be more thrilled for having Brad. You know, Brad and I worked for 7 years together at ABC and ESPN. And it'll be seamless for us. It'll be a little different for the fans, I think. You know, Brad and I have already done a few interviews, and he started, taking the opposite side on some things. And I go, what the hell are you doing? I miss Vern already. You know, Vern never argued with me like that. So it'll be a little different, but it's going to be good.
Yeah, Brad Nessler is absolutely a pro's pro.
He's the
perfect choice. Like you said, you've worked together before. But chemistry in the booth can be something that's hard to quantify. You clearly had it with Vern. You're going to have it again with Brad.
Yeah.
But there has been times probably where it hasn't always been there. I mean, how does that happen? And how often do the viewers even notice these things?
Actually, a lot of young broadcasters who get into it at ESPN or Fox have called me for advice. I've been at this now since 1990. And the analyst job is a little different job than the play-by-play. But what I tell them all is, you know, part of your job is making the other guy in the booth comfortable. You know, you just can't think about yourself. I mean, it's very much like playing sports. I mean, you know, a receiver has to make a quarterback look good and throttle down and catch the ball in stride. And the basketball player has to come off a pick and roll and make himself available to a good pass. You know, a shortstop has to back up a throw. It's very much the same as two guys working in the booth. You know, Brad and I have done it for 7 years. It's kind of come natural. We both kind of understand it. But I think it's a rarity if you can't make it work with anybody. I mean, that's pretty selfish if you can't make it work. We are there to cover the game, not really, you know, talk about ourselves.
Now, unlike some other sports, like hockey comes to mind, football has a natural pace for a broadcast.
Well,
where the play-by-play's job and then the analyst job, the play-by-play guy will call the play, and then between the plays, that's your time. Is there ever time in the booth when you're thinking, I kind of need to bite my tongue here? Or do you ever feel the time where I need to fill some space here? Because sometimes it's not always seamless from one guy to the next.
Everything happens in the booth. All of those emotions go through your mind. You know, am I talking too much? Am I sharing information on both sides? You know, it's only natural to root for a close game. You know, so when one team's behind by 14 points, you're talking about how the other team can get back in the game. And, you know, then they get back in the game and you shift to the other side. So all those emotions, and you're never happy. You know, I mean, it's like, like when you went and got your pictures taken, you know, senior pictures in high school, and you get back, you look at all the proofs and go, geez, I took 20 pictures, only one good one. And that's how I feel like after I did a game. You know, I go critique myself and measure it. And I always measure like how many times I talk, you know, on percentage of plays. Let's say I have 150 plays. How many times did I talk about offense? How many times did I talk about defense? How many times did I talk about referees? So I categorize that, and then I talk about how many times was I negative? How many times was I positive? It's amazing the actual numbers.
You have your own box score. I never would have thought of it that way.
Yes, I do. I've been doing it for 25 years, you know. So it's amazing how much more positive you are in a game. Like, you know, literally in a game, it'll be 80% real positive in a game. But the 20% is what people, and rightly so, think about, because that's the way it is. That's why we get into that, the emotions and the consequences of these games.
Yeah, you were sort of taking me to my next question. How often do you take off that headset and you say, we really nailed that broadcast? How often do you take it off and say, God, that was a flaming piece of garbage? Or do they all sort of feel the same when the game's over?
Your biggest fear after a game is if you miss something really obvious. It happened to us back when I was working with Brent Musburger. We had missed one of the key players for Virginia Tech who got hurt at the beginning of the second half, and we really never noticed that he wasn't out there. We got caught in offensive stuff, and I think Michael Vick was playing in the game, and it was...
Well, he tends to be distracted.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was Dick Vitale always talks, and part of it is shtick, and I get that, and I do it too. You know, I've been in this game 25 years, I've never lost a game. And, you know, if you remember him, I used to be a coach, but now I never lost. I actually am the opposite. I don't know, Dick has his way of doing it. I don't think I've ever come away from a game and been, I just like go, oh, that was just brutal. And I listened to it. In fact, Craig Silver, our great producer for CBS, he works all year on my Emmy tape, and I've been nominated 4 or 5 times for Emmy in New York. And he sends me the Emmy tape, and I'm listening to it, and I go, this is horrendous. How can this be the best I am? You know, I call him up, and I go, did you go through everything? And he go, yeah. And I go, I blow. I go, you know. And so, I don't know, it's just the way you are. As a quarterback, you know, I played 13 years in the NFL. One of the unique things about being a quarterback is there always was another avenue to success. And when you're watching the game tape after with your teammates, you know, you could have thrown the ball a half second earlier and the guy would have been open. You could have thrown the ball to the other side of the field and lobbed it. He could have ran under it and the guy would have been open. You could have checked to an audible and the play would have worked. So you're always constantly banging your head of why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do this? You have to have a lot of inner confidence in yourself that as your teammates or your critics, you know, watch the game, you know, they concentrate on what you do wrong, but not any more than I do. So you just kind of go on, you know, you listen to it, you try to improve, and you hope that you've hit the storylines that matter in the game. That's really my main checklist. Did I get the main storylines, or even more than that, did I drive the storylines of the game that I think were important in the game?
Now, you and I talked at Media Days a year ago. Of course, we talked about the quarterback position, which is your baby. It was a lot of inexperience, a lot of question marks. I think it's safe to say it was a down year as a whole in the SEC at quarterback. How do you feel 12 months later about what we might see in 2017?
Well, it's obviously a big upgrade, and that coupled with the fact that the conference has lost a lot of talent on defense. You know, there's a lot of draft
picks. Especially up front.
Sure. So, you know, that's one of the things that the similarity between the SEC and NFL football, the style, the defensive talent in the SEC creates mismatches that the offense can't handle. That was really the name of the game in the NFL. There were certain guys you just couldn't block, certain guys that could dominate a game on defense, and you always had to shape your game plan. Very similar to that way in the SEC. So, you know, back when I played in the NFL, there was two kind of quarterbacks. I fell in the second. The first was the elite franchise quarterbacks. You either had a Dan Fouts or a Dan Marino or Joe Montana, or there was everybody else. And that's very similar to how the SEC is. It's really hard to be an average quarterback in the SEC. They kind of chew you up and spit you out. So there's more good players. The change in the rules and the strategy has also made the quarterback more important, maybe to a fault in this league. I do not think the league is as good as it was 3-4 years ago. I think it's the fundamentals of the league has gone down. They're scoring points, but they're not as good as they used to be.
Now, there were 4 true freshmen in particular who emerged as the starters, some right away, some later in the season. Jacob Eason at Georgia, of course. We had Jalen Hurts and everything he did in Alabama. But then later, Jake Bentley, at South Carolina, and of course, Shea Patterson. Jalen Hurts, of course, was the headliner. He's the reigning offensive player of the year in the conference. But of those 4 guys, does he have the most upside by the time he's done in college? Or maybe another guy could overtake him?
I don't know. I do think that they all have the ability to be to play at the next level in different ways if they continue to improve. For Jalen Hurts, I would hope, and I think this will happen, that his overall impressive stats will go down as he becomes more of a distributor rather than the whole offense.
Right.
I think that's what Alabama needs. I think for Jalen, if he doesn't learn to be able to throw the ball between the hashes, you know, that's okay for 10 games, but you're going to get to that big game where they need to throw the ball between the hashes, and do they have the confidence like they did with AJ or Blake Sims? Clearly they didn't have that last year. But you never know. A guy like Jake Bentley, might turn into a Alex Smith, a Greg McElroy type player that is the perfect guy for this conference, making decisions and maybe, going into the next level. So I don't know for sure. They're extremely talented. But again, I think the league on a whole has become a little bit too much enamored with modern offensive trickery. We're going to trick our way to being a good team. You can tactically trick your way into having a successful plays, maybe at winning a game, but I don't think you can build the foundation of a championship team on trickery and finesse.
Yeah, I do believe that some programs in particular, they're so incredibly quarterback dependent.
Right,
where
totally.
If they're not doing everything, you're not going to win a game.
Well,
and
yeah.
That takes me to like a Mississippi State with Nick Fitzgerald. I think he's a good player. There's a lot of potential, but if you ask him to throw it 35 times every game and run it 25 times a game, if he's not on, how do you win a ball game?
Well, I think you nailed it. It's been kind of my theme the last few years. I get critiqued about it that I'm not willing to accept modern football, but I don't quite see it that way. I see it that in this league, sure, a Josh Dobbs or a Trevor Knight or a Chad Kelly can dominate a game. You know, run for 150, throw for 250, and they're almost unstoppable. You know, like what Manziel did. I kind of felt that the Johnny Manziel success was actually a catastrophic success for the league, because the league started to say, we need to find that one guy who we can shape the whole offense. We don't have to really block him. He'll scramble, he'll run the zone read, he'll throw. We don't even have to get open. We can throw back shoulder throws and he'll put it there. But if Trevor Knight didn't throw for 150 and throw for 250, they lost. And
right. If
you couple that with Josh Dobbs and Trevor Knight taking that pounding, like Bo Wallace took or Chad Kelly took, by game 10, they were out of gas.
How about Austin Allen last
Austin
year?
Allen. Well,
how did he
Austin didn't run as much.
But the punishment.
But Arkansas couldn't run like Arkansas used to run. They became too dependent on trying to just ride Austin Allen, and that's just not Arkansas's mode.
So when you got in this league, the spread was just coming into vogue.
But well, now, because of Urban.
Right. But now it seems like every team in the conference, it's hurry up, it's spread, it's 90 plays a game. Is this a wildcat thing where it's a fad, or is this 21st century football, 90 plays a game now? There's no going back.
Hope not. you talk about football's not like hockey. I think Nick Saban made a tactical mistake when he tried to circumvent the rules and slow the game down. But I think overall he was right. Mm-hmm. Football is not a constant motion sport in my mind. I think there are too many plays. I think too many coaches are chasing big numbers on offense. And I say, that's okay for Arizona State or Purdue or Kansas State, or name the team you want to do it. But in this conference, it's a little different in that, in the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, maybe halfway Penn State expects to contend for a national championship. In the Big 12, Oklahoma and Texas, USC and maybe Oregon a little bit. But in this conference, if you're LSU, if you're Texas A&M, if you're Arkansas, if you're Auburn, if you're Tennessee, if you're Georgia, and if you're Florida, that's seven teams. Measure the success of their season over whether they contend for a national championship. That's not like other conferences. So yeah, it's nice that Northwestern can put up 40 points, but that offense isn't throwing the weight of the conference over to the finesse teams. It's still the big guys. And I think too many coaches are chasing that there's a shortcut to beat Alabama. There's not. Clemson showed it. Clemson got good players. They had a number one draft pick at quarterback, and they executed. That's one of the things that Alabama does better than anybody in this conference. They usually make the clutch plays in the fourth quarter. They did not do that in the national championship game.
All right, let's wrap you up with some predictions, of course. We've got to get you on the record. I'll ask you the same question I did a year ago in the West. You can take Alabama or the field.
My sleepers last year was Texas A&M, and I thought I was right until I really, watched them more closely and saw Trevor Knight just getting beat up by the end of the year. I thought they'd be much better on defense. I don't know. I think I'd have to take Alabama this year instead of the field. I know Alabama's going to be different, but Auburn has a big question mark for me. Yes, Stidham's going to be a much better thrower, but Gus Malzahn's offense has always been predicated that they have to have a running quarterback
Correct.
To make the running game work. He doesn't have to carry it every time, but he has to be a threat.
At least be a threat.
Yes. They do not have that this year. And I don't know if Gus is going to be willing enough to change his whole offense to try to run the ball in a different way. And I don't know if they can run it. I don't think they can pass their way to a championship. So I don't know who else there is. I think LSU is the most likely team, but it's not quite their year to be that team. So
right.
I love where they're headed. I don't know if this is the year. We'll see. In the East, you want me to do the East?
I would love
do
to,
I have
do,
to
the
do the East.
Here's the question. Are you going to have a decent game to call in December? Because you haven't for a little while.
You know, I've always... I'm an outsider in this league, you know, and one of the reasons I came is I wanted to be an outsider. I wanted to be able to look at this thing from outside in and not have any ties. But I always was confused to why Tennessee and Florida would play in September and Florida State would play the last game of the year. I thought it should be swapped. You know, let Florida and Florida State play early, get it out of the way, and let, you know, Tennessee and Florida play at the end of the year where it really matters.
Sure.
It's hard to put Tennessee on. And they're an icon team in the last few month of the season because they don't play anybody. And if they're good, no offense to anybody, but do we really want to put Tennessee Vandy or Tennessee Kentucky on it? It doesn't work for us.
Right.
So the East is a tough cover for us. You know, we don't see them that much. Florida, you know, that win against Vandy last year really made their whole fan base question where they were. And it really, you know, came to fruition in the SEC championship game. It looks to me like if Georgia doesn't do it, I don't know if there's anybody strong enough in the East.
Gary, thank you so much for your time. Have a great week here.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you liked what you heard, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also give us a rating. And for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.